know if things happened this way or not. But what I do know is this is a true story. Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you all for coming out. Welcome to the Alaska Center for Spiritual Living. Just grateful that our roads are a little bit nicer today than they were yesterday. A little slippery. Thank you for coming out. For those of you that have been here the last few weeks, you know by my opening that I'm going to start with a story. We talked about how that was one of the lines that the ancient storytellers, in the days before things were written, this is, you know, we had the oral tradition, and this is how very often the old ancient storytellers would start their stories. The idea behind this is that the facts really don't make that much difference. What's important is the meaning of the story and how it resonates with you. So today, our service is structured around this story, the story of Hanukkah, which happens to be, I think, from everything that we've been able to tell, the story is related in the Talmud is probably pretty accurate. You know, there were other historical accounts of that time that corroborate, so I think that the facts are probably pretty accurate for the story of Hanukkah, but that's not important. The important thing is the meaning. So today I am going to tell the story, and then my dear friend Reverend Rachel is going to give her interpretation as her meaning from that story, how that resonates with her. So that's how it's going to unfold for today. Our story starts probably somewhere around 340 BCE with Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great was a Greek. He was a masterful military tactician, and he conquered much of the Middle East. In fact, he conquered what we call Persia, would be Iran today. He conquered what we would call Iraq today, the Arabian Peninsula. He conquered the Fertile Crescent, all the way over clear to Egypt. He had a really large empire. In fact, he was headed toward India when his men said enough is enough and they stopped. But a Greek general that had conquered much of the Middle East. Alexander was not a great administrator, but what he did in a way was brilliant. He gave each of the areas that he conquered a certain degree of autonomy. He let the people practice the religions that they had done. He let them speak the same language. He didn't persecute anybody. What he did was tax them. And a lot of the people figured, well, we're going to be paying tax anyway. I guess we might as well pay him. And in exchange, they had a certain degree of peace throughout the region for a relatively short period of time. Alexander the Great died at the age of 33 from what we think today was probably the flu. Things stayed the same for just a short period of time after Alexander died, and then there started to be unrest, and the provinces that he had conquered started to break up once again. The province that around the area of what today we would call Israel, the area of Palestine, Israel, remained fairly independent, and the various people that were in charge of that continued to give people a certain degree of religious freedom, a certain degree of autonomy. They were assimilated very slowly into Greek culture. They began to speak Greek. They began to adopt many more Greek ways and whatnot, but they held on to their religion and they held on to a lot of the things that were really important to them until we come to about 175 BCE. And so I want you to step back now, close your eyes if you're comfortable, relax, and slip into the sandals of a second century BCE Hebrew in Jerusalem. Feel the warmth of the sun on your face, feel the hot desert air and feel what it's like to be that second century BCE Hebrew. You'd been given a certain amount of freedom, but you have a new emperor. You have a new leader of the area of Jerusalem, of Judea. His name is Antiochus Epiphanicus. Antiochus is not a nice guy. And that's putting it mildly. Antiochus is a real jerk. Well, it's by his name. You can see that by his name. He named himself Antiochus Epiphanicus. The idea of today we use the word epiphany for an awakening or becoming aware, a sudden awakening. Back then it meant closeness to God, to being next to God. And so he proclaimed himself to be one with God back in that day, proclaimed himself to be like God. And he had God-like powers. And he used them. He felt that it was his duty to make the people of Palestine more Greek. He forbade their Jewish religion. He took over their temple, their beautiful temple in Jerusalem, and installed a Greek priest. He slaughtered thousands and thousands of Jews simply because of their religion. He did everything he could to stamp out that group of people. So as we sit in this era and we think about the 6 or 8 years at the beginning of the reign of Antiochus, we are very, very oppressed. We are put down. And one day a priest, Mattathesis, who was a descendant of one of the Hebrew high priests, a direct descendant, said, enough is enough. And he called his 5 sons together and began a revolution. Not unlike some of the revolutions that are going on today over in the Middle East. One of his sons was Judas Maccabeus. Judas came to be known as Judas the Strong. Judas stepped in and led and helped in this revolution. And of all things, this ragtag group of Hebrews, I mean, they were kids and women and old men fighting one of the best armies that Greece could put forth. And yet they won. Alexander the Great himself even had once said, I do not fear an army of lions that is led by a sheep, but I greatly fear an army of sheep that is led by a lion. And that's what Judas Maccabeus was. He was the lion that led this ragtag army to victory. They were able to drive the Greeks out of Jerusalem, out of the temple. They reclaimed the temple, but what they discovered was appalling. The Greeks had built a pagan altar inside the Jewish temple. They had brought in animals to slaughter, the worst of which they even made a big deal out of slaughtering pigs, which pigs in Jewish tradition are unclean. And they had pig blood all over the sacred temple. The Hebrews cleaned, and they cleaned, and they got everything ready. They tore down the altar. They did everything that they could to restore the temple to its former beauty and its former glory and its former purification. But what they found is there was only a little tiny bit of oil that was left, a little tiny bit of oil that had been blessed and had been purified left, only enough to burn for one night. And they went to Judas and they said, what are we going to do? Because it's going to take 8 days to purify more oil. And he said, light it, let it burn, and we're going to trust that it's going to work. And he lit the flame that first night. And it's just, we heard in our song, it burned all night. And it burned all the next day. This is a little vial. It's about the size of one of those, you know, 5-hour energy drinks. And that thing burned for 8 days. And it gave him enough time to do the rituals, to perform the purification necessary to make more sacred oil. And from that, the Hebrews began to celebrate their festival of light. And I think it's important to note that this celebration, the festival of light, was not about their victory over the Greeks. They were celebrating the miracle that occurred when that little 5-hour energy bottle of oil lasted for 8 days. So what does that mean, and what does it mean to you? So now I'd like to invite my dear friend and colleague, Reverend Rachel, up to give her idea, her interpretation of the meaning of the celebration of light and the victory.
Am I there? I'm so powerful. I feel like an astronaut. So the meaning of all Jewish holidays is very similar. The bottom line for all Jewish holidays is they tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat. Pretty much across the board. If you know any Jews, just ask them. They'll say that's pretty much it. However, of course, there are deeper meanings than that. And the truth is that, as Reverend Don and I were talking the other day, I said that meaning comes from the meaning we give. So, like, when you bring the holy to the holy, when you find the sacred in something that other people are like, that's not sacred, but you bring it. So we bring meaning to meaning. And so, very much so with Hanukkah, we are bringing the meaning. So. And also, I'm just going to give you a little before I get there. Well, I'm getting there. It's so nice to be here. Jews also, as a people, and we have some in the room, so you can affirm or deny, but our holidays are very much in the now. If you've ever been to a Passover Seder, the language is not those Jews who left Egypt. It's Jews who left Egypt. We are leaving Egypt. So we are the ragtag warriors. We are in the now of Hanukkah because it's always our now. So there's history and there's now, and it's the same. So there's two big pieces to this Hanukkah story. There's the miracle of the oil and there's survival. So I want to tell you a little bit about survival and thriving. So surviving and thriving, it's different, right? You can be surviving but not thriving. Reverend Don shared with me the other day. So next door is the Midas building. And on top of the Midas building is an air vent. And he was sitting in his office one day, and he looked out, and he noticed this really cool thing happening. The ravens were getting bread from the House of Bread dumpster, flying up to the Midas building, putting it on the air vent, and toasting it. Not only that, they were flipping it over so that it was toasted on both sides, because that's the best toast there is.